All right. Well, you can probably place bets on what I'm fixing to say next. It's an easy one, and it goes like this. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It turns out that it is, in fact, chapter 13 of the book of Exodus, or Shemot, and verse 17. And as you recall, at the end of the last Torah portion, we have the people of Israel that have been through all of the 10 plagues, or the 3 times 3 plus 1, and it turns out that Pharaoh, having lost his firstborn, finally says, okay, y'all get out of here. And the verse begins this way in verse 17 of chapter 13. It says, and it came to pass, Be-shalach, or when Pharaoh had, no, he didn't let him go. The shalach word means literally sent him away. He exiled him. He said, get out of here. So when he had sent the people away, that Elohim didn't lead them the short way, which would have been the land of the Philistines, in other words, along the coast, right smack up the coastline, although that was far closer. Instead, Elohim said, lest peradventure the people repent, or, well, actually the better translation is groan or regret. They whine and they decide to turn around when they see war, and in fact, then they return to Egypt. Now, I want to make a quick comment on this, because this is one of those verses that leaps off the page at me, because I can't help but think that we are seeing something that is, I guess I would say, a caution like that today. That as we are entering into literally a new era in America, where we have leadership for the first time in at least 4 years, and there's a lot of kicking butt and taking names going on, that, well, if you want to think of it this way, we have come out of a whole lot of bondage, and Elohim may choose not to lead us the short way, but the longer way, lest that when people see the war that's coming, they turn around and say, let's go back into bondage again. So there's a caution. Anyway, Elohim then led the people about by way of the wilderness of the Sea of Reeds. Red Sea is how it's in some renderings. And the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, went up armed out of the land of Egypt. Now, this is the first use of that word, and it's interesting. The literal Hebrew is it's related to by fives. They went up by fives. So that's rendered as armed. You got to ask the question, where did they get the arms, right? These are slaves. Where did they get swords and shields or whatever else they might have? And the answer seems to be they plundered Egypt. And they not only got gold and jewelry and raiment and all those kind of things, but they got arms as well. But in any case, by fives has to do with kind of a military formation in sets of five. And I always thought that was kind of interesting. Moshe then took the bones of Joseph with him, because he had straightly sworn the children of Israel, remember? And he'd said to them, surely, Elohim will surely remember you, and you shall carry my bones away hence with you. So he knew this was coming, and he wanted to go when they went. So they took their journey, and they went to Sukkot, from Sukkot, and encamped in a place called Etam, in the edge of the wilderness. So they're on the edge of the sparsely settled areas. Then he says, and this is very important, we're going to see it again, but it's vital to the entire story. Yahuwah went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them by the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they might go by day and by night when it was necessary. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. So this was a promise that he made and that he kept. The pillar of fire by night and the pillar of cloud by day was a continual reminder. The next chapter begins by saying, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and of course, what did he say? Speak unto the B'nai Israel that they turn back and encamp before Pi Hahirot, between Migdol and the sea, before Baal Zephon. Over against it, you shall encamp by the sea. And Pharaoh, he says, will then say of the B'nai Israel, they're entangled in the land. Ha ha! I have them right where I want them, right? The wilderness has shut them in. And here comes another reference to what Yah is going to do and how he's going to do it. I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Well, actually, what he's going to do is make his heart chazak. He will strengthen his heart. And he shall follow after them. And I will get myself honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, and the Egyptians shall know, right? We all know what they're going to know. It's what we're supposed to know. It's what Moses would know. It's what Pharaoh would know. And now it's the Egyptians. They're all going to know. Ki ani Yahuwah. And they did so. So it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had fled. And the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned towards the people, and they said, "What have we done? How could we have possibly let Israel go from serving us?" So Pharaoh, it says, made ready his chariots. Now, pause here for a second. This is another interesting Rashi comment. And Rashi's comment is the following. And what he's saying is, this is literal. Because normally you would say Pharaoh makes ready the chariots. He gives the order, right? Gives the order down the chain of command, and the peons go out and they start making the chariots ready and hooking up the horses. But in this case, what Rashi's understanding is, Pharaoh, when it says he made ready his chariots, he did it himself. He went out there and he hooked up his own horses to his chariot. He was so hot to trot, so ready to roll, so vicious. You could almost say he was kind of like what we see today, you know, in some of the leftists. So vicious was his hatred, his Israel derangement syndrome, that he went out and hooked up his own horses and took his people with him, because he was in a hurry. He took 600 of his chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and the captains over all of them. So he basically rolled out the whole army. And it says Yahuwah made Kazak, he made strong and willful the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the Bnei Israel, and the children of Israel went out with a high hand. So they went out kind of like they deserved to go out. The Egyptians pursued after them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, all his horsemen and his army, and overtook them while they were encamped by the sea, besides Pi-Hahirot, in front of Baal Zephon. And we get the impression here, folks, that there is a reason why Yahuwah has brought them this way. He's already told us. That is, I will get me honor upon Pharaoh and all of his army. He's going to show them who the real God is. Pharaoh drew nigh. The Bnei Israel, the children of Israel, lifted up their eyes, and behold, here is the most powerful army on the planet. The Egyptians were marching after them, and they were sore afraid. Scared the you-know-what out of them. The children of Israel then cried out to Yahuwah. And here we go. This is another one of the famous whines. Arguably, it's about the first. It's going to be the first of many as they have left the land, our land of Egypt, rather, and are en route to the other land, the promised land. And they cried out to Moses, and they whined. That's my terminology, the way I like to phrase it. And they said the following, right? You've heard this before. Oh, is it because there was no graves in Egypt? Is that why you've taken us away to die here in the wilderness? Why have you dealt so with us to bring us forth out of Egypt? Right, already they're anxious to go back right into slavery. Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone so we can serve the Egyptians? Because that was better for us, that we should serve the Egyptians, that we should die here in the wilderness. And here comes one of Moshe's most famous lines. It's one I love. He said unto the people, fear not, stand still, and see the salvation of Yahuwah. Now, I like to get this one right from the Hebrew. It's not see the salvation of the Lord. It really is, and you'll notice that there are two words in here. It's the salvation, Yeshuat, of Yahuwah. And, of course, we know that that same root word is literally the very name of the Mashiach himself. So it makes sense. Stand still and see the Yeshua of Yahuwah, where he will work for you today. Because whereas you've seen these Egyptians today, you ain't never going to see them no more again forever. This is it. Yahuwah will fight for you. You just hold your peace. So Yahuwah said unto Moshe, why, therefore, criest unto me? Why are you crying out to me? Speak unto the Bnei Israel. Tell them to go forward. In other words, get on with it. Lift up your rod, he tells Moshe, and stretch out your hand over the sea. Oh, you know what's fixing to happen. We are now going to see one of the most famous, unarguable, and probably well-known miracles in all of the Bible. And everybody can remember the movie with Charlton Heston where he does this. And I remember as a kid seeing this movie at the Cinerama Theater. And it was extremely impressive. Of course, today's technology, but more advanced. But still, in those days, that was impressive. And it made an impression on us that still lingers. Okay, Moshe is told, lift up your rod, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it. And the Bnei Israel shall go into the midst of the sea on dry ground. For behold, I will harden, again, make Kazakh, strengthen the heart of the Egyptians. I'll make them not afraid. And they will go in after you. And I'll get myself honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians, here it is again, shall know, ki ani Yahuwah, that I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the Malak, the messenger, the angel is one English rendering, the messenger of Elohim who went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. So we're talking about that big cloud, right? It went and repositioned behind them. The pillar of cloud removed from in front of them, from before them, and it stood behind them. Why? Well, because it didn't, came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness here, and yet it gave light by night there. And the one came not near the other all night. So in other words, the cloud and the what was later then the pillar of fire by night separated the two camps so that Israel was safe until the morning, and then the rest of the drama is going to play out. Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea, and Yahuwah caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all night long. And the sea turned into dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground. And the waters were literally a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Now, a couple of things about this. A, of course, this is the miracle. B, I usually mention this. I've always thought it was kind of interesting. As you know, as a rule, I'm not a big fan of extra-biblical stuff, but this is one of those cases where there is an oral tradition that when I heard it, kind of made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And I appreciate that, you know what, this does really sound like the kind of thing that the Creator of the universe would do. And essentially, the story goes, remember, he's just finished saying, tell him to go forward, get on with it. And that at the point where they finally do and are told to enter into the sea, that the waters had not yet completely separated. And that what happened was a couple of the elders, and the Midrash actually names them. Hur is one, you know the name Hur. But in any case, a couple of the elders literally decided, hey, when he says go, we go. And they marched in there up to their knees and their waists. And that when they finally committed and went all the way into the water, then the rest of the seas split. Now, again, we don't know what the time interval is here, don't know how long it is, don't know if that is explicitly true, so I don't want to draw any specific conclusions from it, other than I mention it simply because I do think it's interesting, and it does kind of, sort of, at least indicate that when Yah says go, you go. And that sometimes he waits for us to take the first steps. And that, at least, is something that I do think is worth praying about. All right. Well, we know what happened, though. Eventually, the rest of them go through on dry ground. The waters were literally a wall on either side. And the Egyptians pursued. They went into them, after them, in the midst of the sea, all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now, at this point, I already paused once. I'm going to pause again, because what we're going to see here, if you look at the text, are some words that, as it turns out, we're going to see again in just about another five verses or so. And those words have to do with, I've got them underlined here in my text, in the midst of the sea, on dry ground, a wall on their right hand, a wall on their left. And if you go down to verse 29, you will see the exact same words. The children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea. The waters were a wall on their right hand and on their left. Why does he repeat it almost word for word? Answer. Well, it looks like, and by the way, if there's any doubt, when you look at the next set of words, all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen, notice that in verse 26, those two are repeated, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. So we have the same words, and literally those that will look at these things, and I'm one of them now, will point out this is called an otbosh. In English, it's a chiasm, but I like the Hebrew better because it's Aleph Tav Beit Shin. First and last letters, second to first, and second to last. In other words, we see a repeating sequence like this. It's very interesting, and it's kind of leaps off the page at us. I call it kind of like a flashing red HTML symbol, you know, one of those tags that you find. But it sets off something, sets off whatever's in the middle here. So we pay special attention when we see the Atbash and say, what is it that he's setting off? Well, here we go. So it came to pass in the morning watch that Yahuwah looked forth upon the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire of cloud, and he discomfited the host of the Egyptians. He took off their chariot wheels, made them drive heavily. So the Egyptians said, let's flee, let's get out of here from before the face of Israel, because it's Yahuwah who is fighting for them against the Egyptians. Now, gee, he's just finished saying, I will get me honor upon Pharaoh, upon all of his host, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And what is it that we're seeing? They get it. He takes off their chariot wheels. The Egyptians said, let us flee from before the face of Israel, because, here it is, this is going to be absolutely key in the rest of the story. And I will suggest, even for us today, when we understand and walk in obedience, it is Yah who fights for them against those who oppress them. And that is vital to understand. That's why the Atbash is there, it would seem to me at least. Okay, so they come through. Moshe stretched forth his hand over the sea. The sea returned to its strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and Yahuwah overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. The waters returned, and they covered the chariots, the horsemen, all of the host of Pharaoh that went in after them into the sea, so that there remained not so much as one of them. Every one of them destroyed. They knew it before they were ended. The children of Israel said, here comes the end of the Atbash, the Tav. But the children of Israel walked upon the dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus, he says, Yahuwah saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the dead upon the seashore. Now, there's an interesting midrash that goes with this, too. And again, it's a little bit of a Rashiism, and some others have made the comment. I think it's fun to read this and to read it literally. In other words, Israel, okay, that's the mixed multitude, multiple millions of people, saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. But the other way to read this is that individual people of that mixed multitude saw individual Egyptians dead. Well, you know that makes sense, right? No, what's even more interesting is the understanding that what that means is that, good old X, Y, and Z saw the oppressors, A, B, and C, of them individually. And each of them, people are able to look at the dead lying on the seashore, and they go, oh, there's Achmud. He's the guy that really put it to me. He hit me with that whip. I remember. There he is. He's dead. All right. That, in other words, makes a special impact on somebody to see that the oppressor, the one that you remember personally, is dead. So they knew at that point it was over. And it says, and here's the summary, and Israel, notice it's the singular unity. Israel saw the great work which Yahuwah did upon the Egyptians. And the people, Yared, they had fearful respect for Yahuwah. And they believed Yahuwah and in his servant Moshe. So that this made a, and it was intended to, that was the point, a dramatic effect. They escape, they overpower, they overcome, and now they've seen it. Okay, chapter 15, and I pulled this one out, and we'll play the song later on, but Moshe sang at this point what is often called the first of the two that are in Scripture, the songs of Moshe. So then Moshe sang, and the B'nai Israel, he sang this song unto them, and unto Yahuwah, and spoke, saying, I will sing unto Yahuwah, for he is highly exalted. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. Yahuwah is my strength and song, and he has become Yeshua T, my salvation. This is my Elohim, and I will glorify him, my father's El, and I will exalt him. And here's another interesting one. There's a Rashi comment about this one, too, which I've always thought was really informative. Yahuwah is a man of war. And actually, it's the Hebrew is kind of fascinating. Ish Malchama. Ish Malchama. Yahuwah is his name, Shemo. He is an Ish Milchama. And literally, it's not just that he is a man of war, but Rashi's take is, no, what he's saying here is, he is the master of war. In modern colloquial English, you would say, he's not just a man of war, he is the man. He's the man. He is the master, the man of war. and he has proven it. That was the point. Pharaoh's chariots and his host he has cast into the sea, and his chosen captains are sunk in the sea of reeds. The depths cover them. They went down into the depths like a stone. Thy right hand, O Yahuwah, glorious in power, thy right hand, O Yahuwah, dashes in pieces the enemy. And the greatness of thine excellency, you have overthrown them that rise up against you. You send forth your wrath, and it consumes them as stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the winds were piled up, the flood stood upright as a heap, the depths were congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, now this is another interesting comment here, and this is often called the satanic alternative, the adversarial alternative, if you will, to the I wills of the Creator. This is the I wills of the enemy. Pick whatever you want to call the enemy, right? The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil, my lust will be satisfied upon them, I will draw my sword, my hand shall destroy them. Wrong. You blew with your wind, the sea covered them, they sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like thee, O Yahuwah, among the mighty? Okay? And the key word there is Mi kamocha Elohim. Who is like you, O Yahuwah, among the mighty? Who is like unto you, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You in your love have led the people that you have redeemed. You have guided them in your strength to your holy habitation. The peoples have heard. They tremble. Pangs have taken hold on the inhabitants of Philistia. Remember, the coastal area there is Philistine. Then were the chiefs of Edom affrighted. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, taken hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan are melted away. So everybody that's in the path that you're going to tread here, they're scared of you. Terror and dread fall upon them, but the greatness of thine arm, they are still as a stone, till your people pass over, O Yahuwah, till the people pass over that you've gotten. You bring them in, and you plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, the place, O Yahuwah, which you have made for yourself to dwell in, the sanctuary, O Yahuwah, which your hands have established. Yahuwah shall reign forever and ever. For the horses of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and with his horsemen into the sea, and Yahuwah brought back the waters of the sea upon them. But the B'nai Israel walked on dry land in the midst of the sea. So there is the end of the song of Moses. And interestingly here, we see a change and something else which is kind of unique. You know Moses has a sister, right? We first saw her as a little girl. And she was helpful out there in making sure that the little boy that was in the reeds is going to end up in the house of Pharaoh's daughter. So, brave little girl. But it's interesting, up until this point, we don't know her name. Her name is never mentioned in Scripture until chapter 15, verse 20. And it says this, and Miriam, there's the name, Miriam the prophetess, and it describes her as a prophetess. That's the first time we see that role being listed in Scripture as well, in the prophetess form. The sister of Aaron took a timbrel in her hand. All the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam sang unto them, saying, sing to Yahuwah, for he is highly exalted. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. So this looks like a variation on the song we've just heard. And Moshe led Israel onward from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, went out 3 days in the wilderness, and at this point, there's no water to be had. So they came to a place called Marah, which literally is bitter in Hebrew. They couldn't drink the waters there at Marah because they were, guess what? Marah! They were bitter. So therefore, the name of the place was called, can you guess? How about Marah? The people murmured against Moshe. Well, you know the term I like. No, they didn't just murmur. They whined. We're starting to see this, and it's going to be a pattern before we're done with this Torah portion. We're going to see a consistency developing. The people murmured against Moshe, and Yelnu, it kind of sounds like, Nu is the collective third person form, the all of them form, and They whined. Yelnu. I guess they yelled against Moshe, saying, "What, oh, what do we have to drink here?" And he cried unto Yahuwah. Now, this is a reasonable thing. They're thirsty. I understand that. He cried unto Yahuwah, and Yahuwah showed him a tree. And he cast that tree into the waters, and the waters were made sweet. So, it says, there he made for them a chuk ve mishpat. A chuk and a mishpat. Now, these are important words. They're words that I have made reference to and want people to understand over and over and over again. We know that the Torah consists of teaching, it's instruction. But when it comes to things that have kind of a legal import, they're usually described in English as statutes, judgments, and commandments. And this first one is, in the singular, is a chuk, or chukat, plural. And he made for them a statute, a chuk, and an ordinance, a mishpat. And there he tested them, or proved them. Now the question always arises, what are we talking about? He made a statute and an ordinance, but it doesn't tell us. Okay? Now, there are speculations, and Rashi believes, and I think he makes a pretty good case, that the first thing that's being talked about there, the chuk, is in fact the Sabbath. And we'll see why that is as we read through it. But I think the reasoning is pretty good. And the reasoning is because later he's going to say, hey, remember, I told you this before. And here's the place where, among other places, maybe, it was told before. So that part makes sense. As to the ordinance, there are a couple of several that are suggested. And we'll come back to those later. But the Sabbath certainly makes sense because it's going to be emphasized here very shortly. They said, if you will diligently hearken to the voice of Yahuwah, and will do that which is right in his eyes, and will give ear to his commandments, mitzvotin, there's another one of those legal terms, and keep all of his statutes, hukin, I will put none of the diseases upon you, which I have put upon the Egyptians, for ani Yahuwah Rapha. So this is also referred to as one of the names of Elohim that appears in Scripture. Not just Yahuwah, but Yahuwah Rapha, Yahuwah who heals you, or Yahuwah the healer. So they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water, and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. The next chapter says, they took their journey from that place, Elim, and Kol Edat, of the congregation of the Bnei Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month. Anything ring a bell there? 15th day of the first month is Pesach, right? 15th day of the second month would be the second Pesach that we haven't yet been told about, but we will. So it's a day that's mentioned, and it is, in fact, going to be the time that we're going to see as the second Passover. Where if you missed the first one, this one is the way to make up for it. After they departed out of Mitzrayim. And it says, Kol Edat, the whole congregation of the Bnei Israel, again, they did the same thing. They vayel against Moshe and against Aaron there in the wilderness. They whine. And the Bnei Israel said unto them, I wish we had died by the hand of Yahuwah in the land of Egypt when we sat by those flesh pots, because we had bread, all the bread we could handle, and we ate bread until we were just full of it, and you've brought us out here into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then Yahuwah said to Moshe, behold, all right, he's still behaving very charitably unto the people. He says to Moshe, behold, I will cause it to rain bread from heaven for you. People will go out and they'll gather a day's portion every day so that I can test them, see whether or not they will walk in Torah T, in my Torah, or not. See whether they'll walk it according to my instruction or not. Now, it came to pass on the sixth day, and it will come to pass, that they will prepare that which they bring in, and it'll be twice as much as they had every other day. So Moshe and Aaron said unto the Bnei Israel, at evening, then you shall know that Yahuwah has brought you out from the land of Egypt, and in the morning, then you shall see the glory of Yahuwah, for that he has heard your whining, your murmurings against him, against Yahuwah. And what are we that you murmur against us? So that word here, and this is the first use of this form of it, is teluna, the murmurings. Moshe said, "This shall be when Yahuwah shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because Yahuwah has heard your murmurings, which you murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings aren't really just against us. No, they are against Yahuwah." That word is now appearing quite a bit. So Moshe said unto Aaron, "Say unto Kol Ha'edat of the B'nai Israel, all the congregation, come near before Yahuwah, because he's heard you and your telunet tekim, your collective, all y'all's murmurings." So it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the B'nai Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of Yahuwah appeared in the cloud. And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, "I have heard the murmurings plural of the B'nai Israel. Speak unto them, saying, at dusk you will eat flesh, and in the morning you'll be filled with bread, and you shall know," right, what? We know. "You shall know ki ani Yahuwah." And this is the y'all form. "You all shall know ki ani Yahuwah." Now it came to pass at evening, the quails came up. They covered the camp. In the morning there was a layer of dew round about, basically everywhere. And when the dew layer was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness was there a fine scale-like thing, fine as hoarfrost on the ground. So, you know, I guess if there was a picture, the closest I've ever been able to come over the years is something like cotton candy. I'm sure it didn't taste like cotton candy, but we're told later how it tastes. But it probably was in the form of cotton candy in terms of picking it up. I bet you just kind of pick it up and you could fill buckets and satchels with it real easily. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "Ma!" Right? That means what? What? Ma! What is it? Because they didn't know what it was. So Moshe said unto them, "It is ha-lechem, the bread which Yahuwah has given you to eat." So this is the first use of this question, what is it, ma? "This is the thing which Yahuwah has commanded. Get yourself gathered up, every man according to his eating." In other words, however much you want to eat, get it. "An omer ahead, according to the number of your persons, you take it, every man for them that are in his tent." So you go out and you gather for everybody. The children of Israel did so. They gathered some of them more, some of them less. And when they did, they meet it with an omer. So he that gathered much had nothing left over. He that gathered little didn't lack anything. They simply gathered every man according to how much they intended to eat. So Moshe said to them, "Let no man leave any of it until morning." You get what you're going to get, and you eat it. You don't leave it. Notwithstanding, some of them did not hearken unto Moshe, because some of them left some of it until the morning. You knew that was going to happen, right? And it bred worms, and it rotted. And Moshe was pretty well PO'd with them. And they gathered it morning by morning, every man according to his eating. As the sun waxed hot, it melted. So you got to get it in the morning or it's gone. Now it came to pass that on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, and all of the rulers of the congregation came and told Moshe. And he said unto them, "This is that which Yahuwah has spoken." Has spoken. Okay, was it just recently? Was it, in fact, just a couple 10 or 15 verses ago? Or is it just that he just spoke it just now? Well, it's not clear, but we're going to see that, Rashi's case kind of pans out here based on this text. "Tomorrow," he said, "is a solemn rest, a holy Sabbath unto Yahuwah. Bake that which you'll bake, seethe that which you'll seethe. Anything that's over, lay up for you to be kept until the morning." So this is the exception. On this night, on a Rev Shabbat, the day before the Sabbath, you can keep it over. It'll hang in there. So they laid it up till the morning, as Moshe bade them to do, and it didn't rot, nor were there any worms therein. Amazing. And Moshe said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto Yahuwah. You shall not find any of it in the field." How's that for amazing? This is not just a normal meteorological function. It happened regularly, 6 days a week, and then none on the seventh. 6 days you gathered in, but on the seventh is the Sabbath. There ain't going to be any out there. So it came to pass on the seventh day that there went out some of the people to gather, and they didn't find any. Surprise, surprise, surprise. And Yahuwah then said to Moshe, "How long are you going to refuse to keep my commandments, mitzvoti, and my Torah T, my instructions. See that Yahuwah has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Abide every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. He's making the point pretty strongly. So the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called the name of this thing Manna. What is it? Yeah, manna. And it was like coriander seed, white. The taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moshe said, this is the thing which Yahuwah has commanded. Let an omerful of it, of the manna, be kept throughout your generations, that they may see this bread wherewith I fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you out and forth from the land of Mitzrayim. So Moshe said unto Aaron, get yourself a jar, put an omerful of the manna therein, and lay it up before Yahuwah to be kept throughout your generations. So they're going to put it away so that later generations would see it. And Yahuwah commanded Moshe, and as he did, so did Aaron. He laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel did, in fact, eat manna for 40 years until they came to the land inhabited. They ate the manna until they came under the borders of the land of Canaan. Now it tells us, an omer is a tenth part of an ephah. And I've always thought that's interesting. You know, why is that put in here at the end of this chapter? I don't know the answer. I suspect one of these days we will. And it's probably something significant. But as it is, the fact that it's just kind of sitting there is more than a bit fascinating. All right, chapter 17 is the final chapter in the portion. And we're going to see that one more time there's going to be a plot thickening. And it says here, and Kol Edat, all of the congregation of the Bnei Israel, journeyed from the wilderness of Sin by their stages, according to the commandment of Yahuwah, and they encamped in a place called Rephidim. And again, there was no water for the people to drink. So the people strove with Moshe, and they said, give us water, because we're thirsty, we need to drink. And Moshe said unto them, why are you striving with me? Why, therefore, do you try Yahuwah? Says the people there thirsted for water. And what do you think they would have done? Oh yeah, they murmured, they whined against Moshe. And they said, is this just now finally starting to sound a bit familiar? Even repetitive? Why, oh why, have you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us along with our children and our cattle all here with thirst? And Moshe cried unto Yahuwah, saying, what shall I do to this people? They're about ready to stone me. And Yahuwah said unto Moshe, pass on before the people, and take with you the elders of Israel. Take your rod, the one that you smote the river with, take it in your hand and go. Behold, I will stand before you there upon the rock in Horeb. And there he says, you shall smite the rock, and shall come water out of it that the people may drink. And Moshe did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. The name of the place was called Massah and Meribah. And the words literally mean temptation and strife. Because of the striving of the Bnei Israel, and because they tried Yahuwah, saying, is Yahuwah among us or not? And there's a fateful question. Is Yahuwah among us or not? And then we get a kind of a fateful answer. I've always thought the abruptness of Scripture in this particular place is telling. Is Yahuwah among us or not? Then came Amalek. Oh, that's an answer at least, of sorts. And fought with Israel in Rephidim. Moshe then said to Joshua, choose us out some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I'll stand on top of the hill with the rod of Elohim in my hand. Now this is another one of the famous battle scenes. Got Moshe up on top of the hill. He's got his rod in his hand. And Joshua is down on the battlefield. He fought as Moshe had told him to do. And he fought with Amalek. And Moshe and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. So he got Moshe and the two people up there with him. Came to pass when Moshe held up his hand that Israel prevailed. Hand with the staff in it. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moshe's hands got heavy. So he took a stone, and they put that stone under him so he could sit down on it. And he did. He sat. And Aaron and Hur stayed side by side, and they held up his hands. One on one side, the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. Boy, think about having your arms up for literally hours. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Lefi cherev. Really, I like the translation. It literally means with the mouth of the sword. So the sword literally eats blood. It's kind of an interesting metaphor, isn't it? Lefi cherev. Yahuwah said to Moshe, write this down for a memorial in the book and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And there's going to be some pretty nasty judgment against Amalek and some things that are said right here. So Moshe built an altar, and he called the name of it Yahuwah Nisi. There is another one. That's two now of the well-known names of Yah in this very portion. Yahuwah Nisi, my banner. My banner, the standard, in other words, which is lifted up. That was what his hands did. And he said, the hand upon the throne of Yahuwah, Yahuwah will have war with Amalek from generation to generation.